From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Michael Alonji is a California teenager who was born with a female body but wants to transition in a permanent way to being male. You might have heard Michael and his mom, Jean, in a story earlier this month by Cap Radio's healthcare reporter, Sammy Kayola. So let's play a little bit of that story. Here's Sammy.
When it comes to Michael's transition, he and his mom are a team. Here they are at dinner time.
Yeah, you made the cookies.
I did. They're good. Do you want some water?
Michael is part of a wave of transgender kids, and the medical system is trying to keep up. The American Academy of Pediatrics recently suggested that parents and doctors support gender exploration and start treatment when necessary and appropriate. But Dr. Catherine Gardner at Sacramento's Gender Health Center says many doctors are hesitant. They worry children will change their minds. Some haven't even seen a trans patient before.
Human beings don't fit into the box the way that medicine has created gender boxes. And so when you have someone's experience not really match up with that, as a physician, there's a tendency to say, well, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to, like, you know, I don't know.
Some groups want to block kids from treatment. But Gardner says that jeopardizes their mental well-being.
And that's some of what we're going to explore in this conversation. Michael and his mom, Jean, are in the studio with me today. Hi, and welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Michael, I'm just meeting you for the first time, and I'm curious about more of the story. So take me back to early childhood years, and even though you were in a girl's body, tell me when you started thinking and to what degree that you really were and wanted to be a boy.
Yeah, so when I was little, I never really fit in with the binary system. In preschool, I would walk around with a giant poofy skirt and a Spider-Man mask, and that's just kind of always been me. Like, I just don't fit with that binary that people seem to think exists, even though it doesn't. And then in middle school, I was in a place where things were very binary. You're a girl or you're a boy, and it's all determined by what you're born with. And I'm just like, I disagree with that for just life reasons, but also that doesn't fit who I am. And from there, I just kind of kept thinking about that. And then I was like, huh, there's a word for this. It's transgender. Maybe I should think about that. And then I just like, kept thinking about it and doing research, and then I figured out, oh, that does apply to me. That's who I am. And then I just kind of did that.
So in preschool, it's not unusual for kids to play girl or boy or princess or warrior or all kind of playing with all the different roles. So wearing a Spider-Man mask and a poofy skirt maybe doesn't mean anything at that stage. And I think that's the place that I'm curious about, is where in your mind you thought that was different from any of your friends who might be wearing costumes or trying to figure out roles.
So you're right. Anyone can do that. But then as like I got a little bit older, I started to realize that like, there's a difference between playing with something and doing it because it's fun and that being who you are as a person. And the people that I was around, like, at school were more of a, you probably shouldn't do that, even if it's just for fun. And I was like, yeah, no, that's just who I am and I'm okay with that.
Were they telling you shouldn't do that because they were worried for you?
Well, they weren't directly telling me that because I didn't really figure this out because it's just how my brain works. Mm. I didn't realize it was different. But I think when people, like, they know what they know, and it's hard to accept that the way you see the world is not how it actually is. And so I think it's just hard for people to realize that, especially when, like, the one person they know going through it doesn't even know they're going through it the way I was. So.
It's a good moment for mom to step in and talk about what Michael's talking about from your perspective. What did you see as this child of yours is growing up and making this very big discovery?
Yeah, I mean, you make a really good point, Beth, that there's, and one of the central values of our family
really has been that there isn't one way to be a girl or one way to be a boy. And you heard Michael talk about the binary and sort of the social construct of what it means to be in one of those two categories doesn't apply so much, I think. Or we hope that it doesn't in our family. And so as Michael was growing and expressing himself in ways that were different from his peers, I just thought it was because we're not going with the binary in our world.
You were just an open family.
Right.
So he was just being open and exploratory.
But he started to express around middle school that he felt like we wanted him to be somebody that he wasn't. And I get a little bit emotional when I talk about that, because as a parent, of course, I don't want him to be someone that he isn't. I think it's my privilege as his parent to have him help me discover who he is. And at the time, he was discovering how to talk about who he was and to understand that. So there were a couple of years where that was a frequent topic of conversation in our house. How could he tell us who he was, and how could he understand who he was?
Was there pain during this time, Michael? Were you having a hard time articulating this? And Jean, did you end up feeling sadness that maybe you had missed something he was trying to say, Michael?
Well, I think like during middle school, it's hard for anyone to communicate what's going on. And like, I didn't really have the words to say what was going on because I didn't want to be one of those people who's like, oh, well, I think this. So, you know, I'm just going to tell everyone I'm trans. And, you know, if I'm not, it's fine. Which, like, I don't like it when people try to be part of something that they actually aren't. So I was trying to be cautious of that. And so I was trying to find the right words to say things, which is just hard in general. And not knowing what words to use just made it infinitely harder.
Yeah. Definitely. But I didn't know if it was just normal tween angst or if there was something, you know, something else going on.
Well, if you had any doubts, Michael probably cleared them up for you when he said, I actually want to start the medical process. I actually want my body to change, which was probably something that, Michael, by the time you said it, you were already plenty there in your own mind. Am I right?
Yeah, it's one of the things about medically transitioning is that, like, if someone tells you, oh, I want to start testosterone or I want to start estrogen, you're like, whoa, this is a big, huge thing. But most people, like, it took me months to figure out that that was something I could do, that that was something I wanted, and then figuring out how to say that. So, like, I'd already spent a good amount of time thinking about this before I told anyone. I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize. They're like, oh, well, did you think about the effects? It's like, yes, yes, I have thought about those. I have researched them. And so.
Yeah. So Michael knew about a year and a half before he told me. And that was about 2 years ago. And so he's just come out very publicly in the last couple of weeks in the story with Sammy. But so that's 3 years of process and 3 years of talking about it and working with a therapist and talking to medical professionals before getting to the, okay, now let's do testosterone.
Did mom and dad react differently, Michael?
To my coming out? Mm-hmm. Not really. I'm very lucky. I have parents who support me and want me to be happy and will help me achieve that. I had a hard time coming out to them because I hate the idea of coming out. So, like, I had a hard time, but every time I've come out to someone in my family, I've always been met with unconditional love and support, and I'm lucky for that.
We are going to talk a little bit more about the medical change going on, but since you brought it up, Jean, what about coming out so publicly and the story that aired on our air and online, and people who may not have even known anything about this but know you suddenly have this window into a very personal and what used to be private part of your life?
Yeah. I have had a lot of, like, friends from school be like, oh, my mom heard you on the radio and she just thought that was so cool. I one of my friends who graduated from high school last year texted me before I even had a chance to read the article and was like, oh my God, you're on Facebook. And I'm just like, yeah. And I've just had a bunch of people be like, that's so amazing that you did that. And I never realized some of that. And that's been really cool.
You're how old now?
15.
And a sophomore?
Yes.
At C.K. McClatchy High School. You, I understand, are in the Performing Arts Academy and History and International Studies programs. So are there skills in the things that you're interested that are actually helping you navigate all this?
Kind of. The HIS program that I'm in, that's Humanities and International Studies, we have a lot of discussions in those classes, and we deal with different opinions. And from those classes, I've always liked speaking my mind, but those have helped me to like use good language to describe what I actually mean, and that's been helpful.
Jean, how do you navigate when to hold on and try to protect Michael and when to step back and let go?
It was really difficult at the beginning to know where that line was. But following Michael's lead in when and how to tell his story has been the right choice for sure. And making sure he knows he always has permission to stop. If he's entered into a conversation and it's not working, he can leave at any time. He's in charge of his own information and where it goes. You know, like all families with teenagers, we have strict rules about social media and the kinds of things that get posted. But in terms of telling his story, it's his choice, for sure.
You know, that's a question I would ask any parent.
Yeah.
And your answer actually applies to any parent and child where the young person is trying to figure out what to say about himself or herself. I have that same conversation with my grown siblings. We're always trying to figure out what to say about ourselves and in what arena. But the impact, Michael, of this topic and of being a transgender teen and figuring out how to transition and when to transition, it's a really hugely pivotal conversation in our country right now.
Well, and Michael's always been an activist on a variety of issues. So speaking about something that's so personal to him, you know, is really, it's moving and powerful.
That's Jean Alonji, and I'm talking with Michael Alonji. Michael is a transgender teenager trying to make his transition more permanent. So what barriers did you run up against in the first thing that you mentioned is hormone shots?
Yes. So to get hormones, you need kind of like the seal of approval from a gender therapist.
Because of your age?
Yes.
At what point do you not need that approval? Age 18?
I think you always need a gender therapist's approval. But at under age 18, you've got to be in care for a year before you can have that.
Okay.
Yeah, so in my experience, it was recommended to me that I start on hormone blockers, which basically just stop production of estrogen in my body. And so I did that. And the plan was see if those help with my dysphoria. If they do, great. If they do, but it's not enough, or if they don't, we can start T.
Dysphoria needs defined here.
So dysphoria, the real term is gender dysphoria, is something that most but not all trans people have, and it is basically just discomfort caused by being in the wrong body. And it's kind of like anxiety and depression. Yeah.
So you had already gone into puberty in your female body.
Yes.
You had already started a period.
Yes.
And your body was changing. And so tell me about the battle, Jean. And is that the right word for it? What word is appropriate in terms of how you met the medical system?
It's people want to do the right thing, but it's sort of this non-productive. It doesn't move quickly. Yes, we hear what you say, but slowness to act and uncomfortable. Some of the providers that we talked with were uncomfortable acting because of Michael's age, because Michael has, you know, the binary doesn't really work in our family. So kids who come out as very definitely binary trans, doctors are a little bit more comfortable talking about that sometimes. But on the spectrum of gender, and gender is a spectrum, being in the middle, there's just a lack of comfort, not a lack of respect for it, but a lack of comfort in talking about.
You weren't unclear about wanting to change to a male body. That you were sure about, right?
Yes.
But there's sort of, am I getting this right, kind of an androgynous view of the world that you have?
Yeah. So I want a male body, but like my gender expression is kind of just I wear what I want to wear. I talk the way I want to talk. And I'm just me. Like, I do use masculine pronouns and masculine gendered language, but I don't, just internally, I'm just Michael. And I think that's something that's really hard to understand for people who haven't gone through it and who also, like, I don't understand what it's like to be cisgendered, which is just not being trans. And a cisgender person isn't going to completely understand what it's like to live in my brain. And I think that's kind of hard for people to understand.
What name do you go by at school?
Michael is actually my birth name. So that kind of worked out for me when I was born.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. You named your daughter Michael at birth.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Right.
Yeah.
I can't explain life.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so the name part is okay.
Yes.
Do some people meet you and think that you are a girl or use a girl pronoun with you?
Actually, yes, which is kind of funny because when I was younger, like if I went to the airport or something, people would see the name Michael on my boarding pass and would assume that I was a boy. And that would always annoy me when I was little. And now I get more feminine pronouns than I did when I was younger, which is kind of ironic because when I was little, like I had long hair. I looked like your typical 7 or 8 year old girl, but now I don't. And I still get more she, hers.
How does the gender pronoun choice affect you? How is it when you're either called her or she versus him or he and what you want? How does that register?
So being misgendered, like when someone calls me she or her, that often will trigger my dysphoria. And often, like if I like am at a restaurant and the waiter calls me he or uses masculine gendered language, that'll make me feel really happy and I'll feel safe. But if they don't, then I'm automatically just a little bit more cautious. And if they do misgender me, that triggers dysphoria. And when my dysphoria is bad, it is very hard to correct someone. And I think that's something that most people don't understand. Like when I tell someone my pronouns, who I've known for a long time, they'll be like, oh, you know, make sure that you correct me if I ever get it wrong. And it's hard to explain that you're going to get it wrong and people make mistakes and that's okay. But I can't tell you that.
I found it to be a powerful tool when it was suggested that I could just ask someone, what pronoun do you prefer?
Yeah. Yes.
It was like getting a new window into how to connect with another human being in a way that didn't mean that I initially offended someone first and then had to find out awkwardly later. Yeah. So,
Beth, can I say something about dysphoria? So it's the problem isn't that then Michael is uncomfortable. The problem with dysphoria is the risk of suicide. And kids who are trans, about half try to kill themselves at one point in their lives. And so dysphoria is a very serious issue that we really need to pay attention to.
Can I ask you, Michael? It's a hard question to say directly, but have you gotten to that point? Have you thought about ending your life?
No, I haven't. I know a lot of trans people who have. I haven't, but I know people who have.
So what's next? What physically can happen next within your age range and what the medical profession can do?
So I'm hoping to start testosterone at the end of the school year. That might be slightly earlier. And I want to see how well that helps with my dysphoria. And from there, I can be on testosterone until I'm 18, and then I can think about, well, then I can get surgery, top or bottom. I have to be 18 to do that. Yeah.
Of course, there are always risks with hormone injections of any kind, but that does give you a window, as you just said, to find out how it feels with the shift in hormones in your body, and does that ease the struggle for you?
Yeah, and that's kind of something that I want to know, because having testosterone would reduce a lot of the triggers I have for dysphoria, such as like having a higher voice and just things like that that people tend to brand as feminine. And that's pretty much the reason why I want to go on T.
Do you think you sound more like a girl than a boy?
In my head, I think I do, but like when I listen to a recording of myself, I don't. I also am conscious of like trying to make my voice sound lower when I talk to people. I'm doing it right now. But I do that a lot, and I didn't realize I did that for a long time until I had some friends over, and my mom walked in the room, and she's like, whoa, you sound so different. And now I'm aware of doing it, but for a while, it's just how I talk around people that I don't know super well or that I don't completely trust. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, there certainly are groups that have opposed any of this, and groups that think that teenagers can't really fully know what they want. And the story that Sammy did, I think you know, Jean, raised issues with a fringe hate group that's out there and the confusion right. level because of the name being close. So let's somehow address that that exists, that there is a very polarizing response by some people in this country to what Michael's experiencing and your family is too.
It does. And there's two things I want to say about that. One is it does happen that transgender people want to transition back to the gender assigned at birth, but it's very rare. Once somebody has gone, it takes so much to go through this process, it's very rare that somebody then needs to go back. But it's okay if that happens. In Sammy's story, she mentioned the American College of Pediatricians, rather, as being opposed to trans care for kids. And it's important to note that they are very different from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is very pro-health care for trans kids and transition care. The American College of Pediatricians was formed a little over 10 years ago specifically to protest same-sex couples adopting. And their main platform is that LGBT people are pedophiles. So they are not a recognized advisory body for health, for sure.
We have that clarification on the website. Again, the legitimate recognized medical community organization that you might have been familiar with if you've raised children is the American Academy of Pediatrics. So it's AAP, yeah. Different from the other group. I guess what I'd like to say, Michael, is I'd like to know how this goes for you. And you're still in the midst of high school. We should definitely check back by your senior year and see what's happening, but along the way, too, because we're still in this, I think, new frontier, maybe not in the experience that you're having, but the way we're all talking about it and learning about it, which is really, I think, the important aspect.
Yeah, and trans people, we've been around as long as people have. There are, from most cultures, they have names for trans people. But in Western society, that was kind of like, hush, hush, we don't want to talk about that. And I think that that's just kind of been the attitude that's been adopted by a lot of people. They may be completely fine with someone being trans, but they don't want to talk about it. And that's why I think it's important to do things like this and to talk about it, because most people know a trans person, at least one, and they don't realize it. And I think it's important that people talk about it.
Thank you for letting us get to know you the way you have been, both in Sammy's story and being here today. And likewise, Jean, a window into your family and what this journey is.
Thanks, Beth. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Until the next time, okay?
Sounds great.
Michael Alonji and his mom, Jean. We will post a link to Sammy's stories at capradio.org. And there are a few organizations in the area that might help. So I'm just going to say the Landing Spot in Placer County is one. Ally Moms is another. And Jana Barkin is the co-founder of Ally Moms. Those links will be on our webpage as well at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.